Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Tales of the Larians. Coming to you live with my friend Greg today. We are coming live from the Star Wars room in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm very excited. I've never done an in-person anything when it comes to podcasting. And luckily Greg is being cool about it, even though it's a little bit of an awkward setup. But you're not here and you don't need to know that. If you haven't been paying attention, this is a new segment on the Wampa's Lair where we're inviting you, our listeners, our Larians, to be on and kind of talk about some of your favorite aspects of the Star Wars universe. It is a set list of scripted questions. If you listen to the first episode with Joe Hogan, all the questions I asked Joe, I'm about to ask Greg. The exciting thing is that we're all going to have really different responses. Greg's an awesome guy. I met him on Force Friday. And he started listening to the podcast and finally got myself a Star Wars friend in Boston, which is awesome to have. But enough about that. Let's just get right into it. So I'm going to be asking Greg 8 questions. I'm excited to hear his responses because I don't know what he's going to say for most of it. But let's get this started with the best question, in my opinion, of any question to ask a Star Wars fan is, what's your favorite Star Wars movie and why?
Thanks, Carl. It's fun to be able to be here and talk about Star Wars with you. I want to dive right in and just answer the question. So to keep my cool with Star Wars fans, I've often said that I know Empire Strikes Back is the best film in the Star Wars saga. But I have to say, if you're asking for my gut favorite movie, it has to be Return of the Jedi. Ever since I was a kid, I saw it at the right age. I still was young enough to love all the creatures and the Ewoks. And from the moment Luke flips around and jumps onto that diving board, I was in. And I love the final battle. It's never been topped. I think the way it splices together the three parts, the space, the ground battle on Endor, and then the best duel, I think it's just a masterpiece. And I've always thought it was my favorite for those reasons.
That's great. Jason would be proud to hear that. I think that's a valid excuse because for a lot of folks, Return of the Jedi, even when I was a kid, it was my favorite because it's the most fun. And I think a lot of us can, in a stereotypical way, say Empire's the better film. It's, you know, if you're a film student, it's got a lot of a stronger film quality to it. But Return of the Jedi is a lot of fun. So I think that makes a lot of sense. But Greg, I'm interested in how you were introduced to Star Wars.
It's a somewhat related question, actually, for me, but it's very funny. I had heard a little bit about Star Wars kind of through elementary school. I didn't really know what it was at all. I actually remember kind of vividly in third grade, kind of someone in my class, not really a friend, had the action figures, and I saw them, and I was really interested in what they were. I had no idea. I didn't know what the characters were. The one that stands out was a Greedo, and I was like, what is that thing? I really want to learn about it. I remember like trying to cajole a friend to trade with him to get the Greedo, and then I could trade with that friend. Didn't work out, so I didn't have one. So then when I really got introduced to Star Wars, I was actually in fifth grade, which again, it had been in the atmosphere. You know, I was born in the early 80s, so I was coming of age in the dark times, but you know, it was still around somewhat, especially in elementary schools, I'm sure. So in fifth grade, I was staying over at my friend Melissa's house, family friend for a long time. We were bored. It was, I think, a Saturday night or maybe a Friday night. And she's like, oh, I should show you this movie. And pulled out, you know, a plain old VHS tape that had recorded on it The Empire Strikes Back. And that was the first Star Wars movie I ever saw. She pulled it out, put it in the machine. And this movie started to unroll before my eyes. I remember the crawl. And then I just remember being totally sucked into Hoth and the battle and the snow speeders and all of that. And I absolutely loved it. That night, as soon as it was over, I immediately said, are there more of these? And she said, yes, but I only have one, and that was Return of the Jedi. So I watched Return of the Jedi second, and after watching both of those, I was pretty taken with them. You know, I didn't necessarily understand everything, but it then was a full, I think, at least a year before I saw A New Hope, which feels pretty sacrilegious now looking back on it. But I remember being so confused actually watching A New Hope because it was like, wait, the Millennium Falcon's hyperdrive works? It's like, I can't believe that. It's been broken. Oh, no, wait, that was after the fact. So it was that kind of sleepover. I remember, you know, laying on sleeping bags or quilts, kind of, you know, head on, chin on my hands, elbows on the floor, just staring at the TV and watching this universe come alive. And I don't know if I was a diehard fan from that moment, but my group of friends in middle school were all interested in Star Wars, so it certainly kind of blossomed by the time I graduated middle school in eighth grade, where I come from. And then I was devoted, and I've never looked back since.
That's great. That's just like Joe and even myself. Empire was my first experience of Star Wars as well. And I think that says a lot, considering it's the middle chapter of a trilogy, and it can still grab your attention. Even though there's obviously some backstory we're missing, it doesn't seem to matter. That movie can still capture you. And just like you. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Well, I was just going to add, it is shocking to think now that the whole kind of original trilogy hinges on the Luke, I am your father moment, and I had no idea what that meant or why that was significant. Around that time, maybe I have my years wrong, but there was the Tommy Boy scene where Chris Farley talks into the fan, Luke, lo, la, la, Luke, I am your father. And so I think I always knew that in some way, so it was never a revelation. But I do envy those OT fans that had that moment.
Yeah. Well, like Greg, I'm guilty of not seeing A New Hope for probably about a year after Empire and Jedi as well. And A New Hope was never my favorite, so I didn't care. My typical Star Wars marathons when I was a kid was Empire, Jedi, Empire, Jedi, Empire, Jedi. Okay, maybe I'll watch A New Hope now. Empire, Jedi, Empire, Jedi. So I don't know. There's just something about those films. I'm sure it's a much different experience for those of you who grew up in the 70s and watched A New Hope first. That was groundbreaking, I'm sure. Greg, this is one question I think I might know the answer to, but I want to kind of more interested in the why part. But who's your favorite Star Wars character and why?
Absolute favorite, bar none, is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Carl knows that answer because we play Star Wars CCG sometimes, and as soon as I bust out the Obi-Wan card, I get really excited, whether he survives long or not. Why is Obi-Wan my favorite is tougher. I am, even though I was just admitting that my first viewing of A New Hope was so much later, it is Old Ben that I love most. I love Alec Guinness in that film, particularly as an adult now that I've got a better eye for film. When I watch that, it's incredible to me that he signed on for the movie. It's incredible the performance he gives. So that's part of it. That's the behind-the-scenes stuff. But the in-universe is the real reason why. I think he's the hero, right? I mean, well, he's not the hero, but he's heroic. And to see him as so devout to his force abilities and to this life, we haven't unlocked a lot of those chapters between Sith and A New Hope, but I love to picture what he was doing in the desert during that time. Kenobi, the book, helped us a little bit. Some Ewan McGregor movies would help us even more. But I really, I like to imagine that period in his life. I think, being the age I am, when Phantom Menace was coming out, I was so excited because I'd seen the special editions in the theater. I'd seen all three a couple times each. But then this was going to be new Star Wars. And to have that Obi-Wan connection only made my love for that character grow. And I absolutely love Ewan in the prequels. I will say the way I express that most frequently is in my collection. I buy everything I can Obi-Wan. There's a little drought right now. It's because he's not featured too heavily in that new movie, which is awesome still. But I would like some more Obi-Wan collectibles. But I'm excited. I just moved, so I'm busting out all my Star Wars stuff in it. And the Obi-Wan shelf is a point of pride because there's so many great collectibles on it.
Well, I think that was Joe's favorite character, too, in the first segment. We got to get some more original people, everyone. but no, Obi-Wan, what a great character. And something, that seems to be a fan favorite about Obi-Wan is obviously Sir Alec Guinness, then incredibly portrayed by Ewan McGregor. Probably the strongest actor in the prequel trilogy is Ewan's performance of Obi-Wan. But it seems like both you and Joe kind of shared the opinion that the attraction to Obi-Wan is that he's this loyal character and he's very devoted to the Jedi. I mean, and he kind of is the premier Jedi, the example, even more so to me than Obi-Wan. But I want to ask you a challenging. Yes, than Yoda. Sorry, he is Obi-Wan. but a question I kind of want to ask you, and it, This is the only thing I never liked about the Clone Wars. I liked it and didn't like it, so I want to get your expert opinion because you know more than me and you're more of an Obi-Wan fan. But the obviously the relationship with Satine was great in humanizing Obi-Wan a bit more, makes him a little more sympathetic to Anakin, maybe explains a little bit more why he's so backdoor to what's going on between Anakin and Padme. But there's that line where Obi-Wan says to Satine, "If you had asked me, I would have left the Order." I never liked that because that's not Obi-Wan. But unpack that for me, Greg. What do you think?
That is absolutely an interesting question, and I definitely had complicated feelings when that storyline was unfolding. Because if I remember correctly, there were three episodes where they set up that there had been that relationship, and I think that line you mentioned is at the kind of climax of the third, or towards the end of that arc, and then they fill in more of that later when they return to Mandalore, and eventually, spoiler alert, Satine doesn't make it. And there are a few moments there that are very powerful storytelling. So my day job is studying literature, so I think a lot about Campbell and kind of the terms of how we engage with stories in that way. And if Obi-Wan's your classic, especially Old Ben is your classic mentor figure, a mentor isn't a mentor because they have this innate wisdom. It's because they know the world the hero is moving into, and they've experienced it and lived in it. And I think that for me, at least, I have to define that as knowing how to triumph, but also having experienced the pitfalls and the failures. So I would define kind of his attachment to Satine a little bit in that regard. He had to have something to sacrifice. He had to have some loss in order to become that great mentor figure to Luke and that guardian through all the dark times. So my short answer would be I'm actually pretty cool with it. And I picture kind of somewhere halfway between Ewan and Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan sitting around his hut kind of daydreaming about Satine and the life he could have had he not been so devoted to his faith. So I guess the sacrifice made him richer. I think that's right.
Thanks for clearing that up for me. I don't mind it anymore. I always like it when people can convince me of other things. Like Jason's taken almost 5 years now to convince me to like Jar Jar. So it can happen. Greg, I have a two-part question for you. I'm breaking this question into two parts because I've experienced part of the answer with you, I think. But I'm interested, in what was your favorite way to play Star Wars when you were a kid? Because you've made it apparent that you got into it when you were a kid and the action figures were important. So I want to know about when you were a kid, how did you like to play Star Wars? But even now, how do you continue to play Star Wars as an adult?
So many ways that I play Star Wars. I would say, thinking back to when I was a kid, when I became interested in the saga, it was right around the time that Hasbro started coming out with those He-Man inspired Superman Luke and Sansweet calls it Monkey Leia, which seems a little wrong to me but accurate. So at that time it was so rich. I know OT fans and PT fans talk a lot about how rich their childhoods were. But for us kids who grew up between the two, it really felt like in the mid-90s, like, I got into Star Wars, so they started making stuff for me. And it's such a, like, even though it's called the Dark Times, it's a wonderful time to have been coming up as a fan. So I really felt I got into Star Wars, and then Hasbro decided to make action figures. That's so nice of them. So the action figures were always important to me. I collected a lot of those waves. It was interesting. Back then, Hasbro actually put them in stores so you could purchase them. What a novel concept. I enjoyed Force Friday for meeting Carl, but it was slim pickings, and it continues to be slim pickings. So I collected everything I could. That also turned into the time when I started to have a little more money on my own, so I could buy a lot of them. And I ended up with essentially two big, they were Rubbermaid plastic trunks, probably like 4 feet by 2 feet. And I put every vehicle, every action figure I'd collected into those bins, and I would get picked up by my uncle and taken over to my cousin's house. And my cousin, I had a cousin Miles and a step cousin David, and they were about 2 and 4 years younger than me. And we would just play for hours in their basement bedroom. We would get everything out and we would line it all up, and we'd act like we were picking teams for kickball, right? We would stand there and be like, okay, I get Luke, and then it's your turn, and we get the next one. And half the time, I think we mainly just made our teams, and then we'd go set up our base, and that was pretty much all we had time for. But it was so wonderful, and I remember great adventures, and one of us would read a novel or play a video game and then be the cool kid adding that to our gameplay. So I remember I read the Kevin J. Anderson Jedi Academy books, and I knew Maw installation then and the special hidden base inside the black holes. So I that's where my base was for weeks after that, and I taught them about it, and they would do the same with books they read. So that's a really warm set of memories, and I cherish those times. And that's probably the most play I ever got. You know, I always think as an adult, my brain doesn't work that way anymore. You can't lose yourself into the world of plastic action figures, though I try. So, and then the other way is definitely the Star Wars CCG, because again, hey, you like Star Wars? We'll make a card game for you, is exactly how it felt. All my closest friends played that game pretty much the whole run. I only became aware of as an adult that there were actually Phantom Menace cards created for that game. But we would play that game for endless hours, probably never with the rules quite correct, because it's a very complicated game that's outsmarted Carl and I as adults. But it's a lot of fun still to this day to look through my collection of cards. And that was part of what got Carl and I hanging out after Force Fridays. We realized we both had access to our cards, and we could try it out. And we've had a lot of fun games. We've been switching over lately to the Fantasy Flight LCG card game, which is at least at the moment probably our favorite of the two. But it's really great to, as an adult, play a little more. I'm also avid video gamer. I think I've played every Star Wars video game released. I'm very bad at Battlefront and get pwned by 12-year-olds. So I haven't played much of that, but I'm really looking forward to the Lego Force Awakens, so I can continue my streak of video games.
Well, Greg didn't mention that he also has a newborn, so that kind of eats up time to play Battlefront. Greg and I have had a lot of fun. First off, with the CCG, the customizable card game. Greg kicks my butt most of the time with that. It's a smarter game, so smarter people typically win. Greg is a little bit brighter, but it's a lot of fun, and I used to play that a lot as a kid.
And we have to mention the most epic battle we ever had, and I hope I can get this correct. It needs to inspire a future Wampa's Lair matchup, but I believe you had IG-88. I want to say it was at the Mos Eisley Cantina, and I plunked down Jar Jar, and IG-88 took a shot, and I believe Jar Jar dodged, but somehow kind of tripped. I think I had a card that inspired him to trip and fell and took out IG-88, so I won the battle, and Jar Jar won the day. So sorry, OT fans.
Yeah, there's like Jar Jar is a weak card, but like has this stupid little ability where he always wins. He probably would have taken out Darth Sidious, but yeah, we've had a lot of fun now with the Fantasy Flight LCG game, which is a lot of fun. It's more focused towards anybody can have any card. It's unique from the CCG in the fact that you don't have to spend as much money or to get the rare cards. Everybody's got a fair shot. It moves a lot quicker, which is fun. But I think you hit on it absolutely right, though, about the childhood piece of, you know, I remember trying to play with my action figures even 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Just I'll pull them out sometimes even now and just kind of goof around with them. But it's like, I just can't do this anymore. I guess that part of us grows up. But it's always awesome that we can find new ways as adults to still interact with that world in a playful way. Obviously the card games are two great ways. And I definitely share your opinion about, because for me it was the same thing, kind of getting into it in the mid-90s. And I remember when I first started to like it, I got like some of those Bendem toys. And I was like, these are not going to suffice. And then like a week later, I read this article about Kenner and Hasbro bringing back the He-Man figures. But to me, they were perfect. I didn't see him as He-Man. And it was that same mentality of like, yep, I like Star Wars now, so they're going to give me toys to play with. It was that same mentality, which was great. Greg, keeping with this theme of fun, I'm curious what your favorite lightsaber duel is in the Star Wars films.
Definitely a tough question. In the spirit of the Wampa's Lair, I will have an honorable mention. And that would definitely be the episode one duel. Like I said, I'm not a prequel apologist in any way, but I like them, right up there with the other films. I went to an author event the other night with Cass Sunstein, who has a new book out called the world according to Star Wars. And what he said during his talk is you have the OT, and then you have, I believe he places Force Awakens between trilogies, or he might rank Revenge of the Sith above Force Awakens, and then Attack of the Clones, then Phantom Menace, and then Citizen Kane, and then The Godfather, and then all the other films ever made. And I often feel that way, too. So I want to show a little prequel love with an honorable mention of Phantom Menace. That duel at the end is incredible. Somewhere there exists a really embarrassing video of my high school friends and I recreating that duel. You know, we had our friend Diana had the double-bladed lightsaber, no makeup or anything. I was Obi-Wan, of course. And my friend Mark was quite Qui-Gon, and we recreated the whole thing as best we could. The only part that really stands in my mind is when I was Obi-Wan hanging off the edge, you know, of the I don't know, some kind of bottomless pit, a classic Star Wars bottomless pit. My friend Diana took my lightsaber and kicked it off the edge, and because the camera couldn't actually see that, I felt I had to narrate. So the very stoic Obi-Wan says, "It fell in the pit." And then I of course won the day. But so that's my honorable mention, because I do really like that duel. You know, I certainly see some flaws in it now looking at it as an adult, but I still have a lot of fun watching that. But my number one duel of all time is the Return of the Jedi duel. You can't beat it in terms of its drama, its gravitas. I am a faithful Wampa's Lair listener, so I know you've unpacked that. No, Your Highness, you have failed, for I am a Jedi like my father before me. And I can't hear that. I can't even say it out loud without getting chills and thinking about that moment. But I think it's epic. It's beautiful. I think Luke is really tempted in that moment, and maybe dips a little into the dark side there, striking at Vader. But to have the Emperor there cackling and so on. You know, I recently thought a lot about how the duel at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith kind of reworks that Return of the Jedi duel. And you get Anakin and Luke in the same positions, and Anakin makes all the wrong choices. And part of why that duel works so well is because it evokes that Return of the Jedi duel, I think. It makes you realize that Luke could have gone that way. And I know that's a complaint some have about the prequels, that means it's a lesser duel, but I think to view it all as a saga and see that echo, that resonance, that bit of ring theory, I think is how the ring theory works. I think, you know, it actually helps. It doesn't hurt it. So, yes, and I can't talk about that duel without saying, sister.
We really need other people to be on the show, because that's the same thing Joe said in the first segment. I'm kidding. But yeah, I think that duel, without doubt, it has a special place for folks, because I don't want to repeat myself, but and for the same reasons you said, it's the emotional weight. You get verbal sparring, you get emotional sparring, and you get physical sparring. It's all rolled into one, which to me makes great conflict. Like you, love Duel of the Fates. It's still my favorite duel, even though I recognize there are some flaws, but it was always my favorite. It's the first time I ever got chills in the movies, was watching that duel. And similar to you, recreating it as best I could, often by myself, which was pathetic. But I do remember, even that's really cool that you guys made a video. I'd love for you to get your hands on that and see that. I had one friend who, I didn't have, once I started getting a little older, none of my friends really liked Star Wars, but I had one friend that would humor me, and we decided to start trying to film Star Wars lightsaber fights, and we would try to choreograph it beforehand and be like, okay, now I'm going to strike right, now you defend. And we'd make it so elaborate, and we never filmed anything because it was a pain. But again, there's the fact that these lightsaber duels elicit the response to want to reenact them and to play along with them. But yeah, Return of the Jedi's duel, the choir, oh, it's so good. So good. Greg, what would you say that Star Wars has brought to your life?
What has Star Wars brought to my life? It has brought a lot. I mean, it seems silly at times. I know my wife loses patience with it, but there's not a day that goes by without me thinking a lot about Star Wars and you know, looking at my collection or reading some news stories, listening to podcasts, what have you. But above all, and I think some of my answers have alluded to this already, when I think about Star Wars, I think about the connections I've made through Star Wars and the people who are in my life because either were or are currently in my life because of that connection to Star Wars. It's very embarrassing to say, oh, I hang out with a guy named Carl, and we met at Toys R Us at midnight waiting to get in to buy Star Wars toys. But that is exactly the kind of connection. I had a grumpy friend right after Force Friday say something very cynical to me, like, oh, everybody trotted out of their basement and dust the Cheeto dust off them. And I immediately lashed out at this. Actually, now that I think about it, it might be my sister. Sorry, sister. But I thought that that line was such a great representation of kind of fandom. I didn't know Carl at all, but he said, hey, you know, does anybody listen to podcasts? I have a podcast. I'd already been listening to Rebel Force Radio and Star Wars Minute and a couple collectors cast, so I immediately added it and got involved in the Wampus Lair community, and you're all really funny on Facebook, so I appreciate that. And so I think about those connections. There was somebody further back in line. It was a dad from New Mexico who had come to Boston to drop off his son for college. I think it was sophomore year of college. And they were both 501st members. And they were like, well, we knew it was Force Friday, so we had to find the nearest place. So they were here in the woods of Massachusetts, really, you know, at this kind of isolated Toys R Us that's not all that great, all things considered. But we had a great conversation, talked a lot about Celebration. A lot of us had been in Anaheim and we're reliving those memories. Every phase of my life has been blessed, I guess I should say, with a Star Wars connection. When I started grad school, you know, in my 20s, I bonded with a friend over the Star Wars CCG. I met my friend Jen, who her AIM profile name was Qui-Gon Jen, so I know we were destined. I was Obi-Wan Cass, so we've been mentor apprentice ever since. Sorry, mentor Padawan, master Padawan. And that's who I attended Celebration Anaheim with. You know, that was my present when I graduated with my PhD. She said, you don't have a choice. I bought you a ticket for Anaheim. Get it on a plane and get out here. And I had a fabulous time, and I can't wait to go back to another Celebration in Orlando next year. But I do want to share, this has been a long answer and I apologize, but I want to share one story because whenever I talk about Star Wars, I think about this. I was actually guessing you would ask what my favorite collectible was, so I prepared this answer in the car, but I'll just fudge it and this will be what has brought to my life. So I have this really cool collectible that I love. It's something that as I said, when I was in middle school, I started to really like Star Wars and I got really into it. And I have, she has now passed, but a great aunt named Dawn. And Dawn was this incredible woman, really rich. She had three boys who I don't really know because this is getting into extended family, right? This is my mother's aunt. And she is the smartest woman I know because when she was raising these three boys in the 70s, she knew that they must really love Star Wars and everybody else must. So she bought an extra of every single action figure and had them carded, still saved away. They are going to be given to her grandkids very soon. And I pray those kids know what to do with them because it's quite the collection. But when I got really into Star Wars in my own life, it kind of coincided, and this, I think, helped explain my passion. My parents were kind of going through a rocky period. They separated and then eventually divorced. And I think my Aunt Dawn was really sad for me and knew I was going through a lot. So she found in her collection of things the original Star Wars wallpaper. So the wallpaper was essentially made of two panels, and they're little scenes from A New Hope, and so it's vintage from 77, and she cut me out the two panels, and the way they work is I have them each framed, and one could go above the other or to the left of each other, like it repeats in a kind of a checkered board fashion, but it's the reactor and the land speeder and the Star Destroyer and all that. And that is my favorite Star Wars collectible. I think it's worth like next to nothing because it's wallpaper that my aunt framed. But that to me is really emblematic of this connection, right? She knew I was needy. She knew I was hurting during this kind of rough period in my family's life. So she made that. And when she passed away very suddenly about 3 years ago. That was the first thing I thought of, and I pulled it out, and I you know, it's the social media age, so I took a picture of it and I posted it to Facebook, and I said, you know, I lost my aunt, and this is who she was to me anyway, somebody who would reach out with such great kindness to a young kid who was hurting. And it was really moving. Her sons included in her eulogy, and it meant a lot to me. So that to me is a really intense personal version of it. But this way, Star Wars brings people together. I've been a fan long enough to remember when the Rose Parade happened, and the idiot commentator said, again, the same old tired joke, oh, the nerds came out of their basement when they were talking about the 501st. And I was insulted by that. And I think when people make those jokes, or they pretend the Big Bang Theory is a good television show, I think they're writing us all off as nerds when, you know, everything I've ever come in contact with the Star Wars community shows that we're passionate and we have specific desires and so on. We'll complain about the color of a lightsaber or you know, Kylo's hilt before we actually saw how awesome it was. But in all of that, there's just this rich community right under the surface. And I'm so glad Lucasfilm has really started to recognize that. There wasn't an actor out doing publicity for Force Awakens who didn't say, it's for the fans, right? And it's for all of us. So I'm always glad to increase my role in the Star Wars community because they're so awesome.
Man, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing all of that in all seriousness. That's great. You know, I think there is obviously such a misunderstanding of what a Star Wars, your typical Star Wars fan, you know, we don't all sit in basements and eat Doritos all day. Most of us don't. Most of us have, you know, very normal lives. And I think it's becoming a more accepted part of our culture. And Force Awakens certainly has helped with that. It was such a fun, new, exciting movie for a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is essentially, I think it brings all of us together in a way. And Celebration, they finally have hit that on the head. And I think we can expect probably annual celebrations moving forward now that it's in the hands of Disney. And I think that's great because Star Wars does. It brings people together over a common love. And it does it better than almost anything in our culture right now. As somebody who's been working in the church religious world for my entire professional life, Star Wars brings people together way better. And that's just the honest truth from what I've witnessed. I think there is such a passion among Star Wars fans, and the way they integrate it into their lives and they use it as a window into their lives and a lens through which to see their lives, it helps bring them together. Because, you know, you can relate to somebody when you're like, oh yeah, I felt like Luke, you know, when he was trying to raise the X-Wing, or oh, you know, I felt like Anakin when he's frustrated by his lack of control. And, you know, there's something about Star Wars that hits such a base part of our human experience that we can all feed into it and in so many different ways. And it does. It brings us together and makes us richer. So stepping a little bit out of the deep end, out of the Sarlacc pit, just another little fun question, but curious, and we obviously just got to go to the John Williams Boston Pops concert and listen to some amazing Star Wars music in concert conducted by the amazing John Williams. But I'm curious what your favorite piece of music is from Star Wars.
Two quick confirmations about the John Williams concert, because it was top five Star Wars experiences of my life. One, I did in fact turn around to a very small, scared child and say, shut up. And I am not somebody who does that. I don't know where it came from, but I saw the fear of God in his eyes. And so I guess like Luke, I touched the dark side in that moment. I wanted to confirm, since it was mentioned on a previous episode, and I will also confirm for all the loyal Larians, that Carl did tear up pretty significantly during a couple different pieces. I don't know. You promised Rey's theme, and I was hoping, but I think it was actually Princess Leia's, or and then the finale. Wow, it's a tough question. I'm definitely biased because of that concert. I will say, prior to that concert, I never felt a connection to Jedi Steps. It was kind of neat. It was interesting. I had heard David Collins kind of pick apart how they layered together Luke's theme and Rey's theme, and I thought that was brilliant. But yet hearing it live, it definitely hits me more now, and I've found myself kind of humming that more as I ride the subway or go for a walk or bounce my infant. So that's high on the list. I will say... you know, my honorable mention, I guess, for that category would have to be Rey's theme. I think it's an incredible piece of music. My wife has tried to convince me it's derivative of Harry Potter. I don't hear it. I actually think it's really original and unique. And I loved... I'm really fitting in with your dynamic by just quoting David Collins over and over again. But how David Collins explained how Rey's theme and Kylo's theme have the same pattern with one going up and one going down is just incredible and really brilliant. But I have to go back to Mr. Obi-Wan, Master Obi-Wan, and what has now become the Force theme. There were so many great moments in Force Awakens, but when that music swells after the lightsaber zooms past Kylo's head and hits Rey's hand and she you hear that swell of music, that moment should be really cheesy, right? I mean, hey, we're having a life or death duel and I'm just going to stand here for a minute holding this while you stare at me and I stare back. But because the music is there, because the Force theme comes back, oh, it's an incredible moment. And I went a total of 12 times, which embarrasses a lot of people I know when I say that. But I will say every single time that got a cheer, a whoop, even if it was just me. And it is just one of the greatest moments in that whole film. So I have to say that's my favorite piece of music because of what it's become. I don't know if originally I would have said that, but that's also a question where ask me tomorrow and then it might be a totally different answer.
And I think we just did our little poll with where you all kind of responded that the Force theme by and large took the cake there, which is no surprise. I think it's the most iconic piece of Star Wars music and it is so beautiful, and as an Obi-Wan fan it makes sense that it'd be your favorite. And poor Obi-Wan, he lost the name of his theme. Now it's just become the Force theme, but I think that says more about him. He becomes an embodiment of the Force, really. In the original saga, even more so than Yoda. That is such a great theme. And that scene in Force Awakens when Rey catches the saber, it is cheesy, but to me it's Star Wars cheesy. That's what we should expect from Star Wars. You kind of want those kind of like awkward moments for a second where I think she's overwhelmed by the fact that it worked, and I think Kylo's shocked by, holy crap, I think I might be in a little bit of trouble here. So what a great scene.
And it makes it really interesting in the novel, because I believe right there is where he says, it is you, or he gives some sense that he knows more about her. So I think that moment in the novel gives a lot of credence to those. But it's a powerful moment, certainly.
Well, and now the finale question, and it's the kind of, I ran out of questions, so here's just an everyday question, and you can answer it however you darn well please. But at the end of the day, and obviously this is going to be a question derivative of where you're at in life, because this might be a different answer in 2 years, 1 year, 2 months, two minutes, who knows? What would you say at the end of the day do you love most about Star Wars?
There's so much that comes to mind. I could certainly have like five honorable mentions, but I think a lot of it has been covered by previous answers. Obviously, the connections with people is a big part of this. I am somebody who, as I said, I study literature, and I think part of my love for literature came from the love of mythology in Star Wars. When I was an undergrad, I loved studying the Odyssey and the Iliad and the Aeneid and Paradise Lost, all these big epic poems. And I wrote as many papers as I could explaining that Star Wars is our modern day epic. It's our epic that embodies our values and who we want to be and the heroes we want to have. And that mythology side of it is what keeps me, engrossed. I day to day as a fan, I read all the books, nonfiction, fiction, and I really try to kind of soak it all in. And actually, when we were talking about the CCG, I didn't mention, when I watch A New Hope with my wife, for example, and it gets the cantina scene, she's like, how many of these can you name? And we go like frame by frame. I'm like, boom, boom, boom. I get every single one. And part of that is, again, this mythology. It's so deep. And I know a lot of that came from the West End games, which I never really got into. But the CCG, I learned every name from every card, and I could definitely recite them for a long time, and even through to Return of the Jedi. And that, to me, kind of is that mythology. I'm soaking it in, and I'm constantly trying to learn more. I spent a lot of time reading around Force Awakens to try to appreciate some of those aliens and creatures a little bit more, and hopefully we eventually build up to the richness we've experienced. But I love just to escaping into that universe and just soaking it in, and both the saga mythology, but then everything that that surrounds it, and be it there. What does Ahsoka say? There's some truth in legends, and I think that's how I feel. It's like I want to go to those legends and experience that. And I will just add to that. Maybe this is my honorable mention. I also just appreciate that in my life, the way it's turned out, Star Wars has been a constant all the way through. As I said, I got really interested in it in a kind of rough period of my childhood. Relatively, I'm fine. And then, you know, every time my life has gone through a major change, going off to college, deciding to enter grad school and pursuing a PhD, and then graduating my PhD and having no job and nothing to do, and more recently becoming a father, you know, it's hard to see kind of the narrative structure of my own life. There's been so many changes, as there should be in all of our lives. Get off the moisture farm, right? But really, to think about that, in all those periods, Star Wars has been there for me. And if I need to escape, I can throw on that DVD, I can pull out that video game, I can look at those action figures. So I'm looking forward to continuing the mythology, and that when I start to share it with my son, he's 11 months now, so he doesn't understand much. I'm trying really hard to make Chewbacca his first word, but it's a tough one. He already has a giant stuffed BB-8 and a few other items, so I think I'll get to pass it on and experience it all over again, and hope it remains my constant. I think Disney's going to guarantee that it's a constant in all of our lives from here on out. But I can't wait to see where it goes. I was lucky enough in Anaheim to be in that panel for the Rogue One teaser motion poster, whatever they called it. And I was screaming at the top of my lungs when I got out, like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing we've ever seen. So I was so glad when the trailer came out and finally the rest of the world, and I played the hipster card like you wouldn't believe. I was like, yeah, I thought Rogue One was cool way before all of you. But I can't wait. I'm excited for the spinoffs. You know, Han Solo makes me a little nervous, but I'll give it a chance. And I can't wait to see where it goes from here, because I think it's, you know, a great time to be a Star Wars fan. You know, I'm a Star Wars fan 30 years now, so they want to give me a bunch more stuff, and that's good.
We can think Disney is basically just giving Greg a 30-year anniversary present. You know, that's what all this new Star Wars stuff is about. But yeah, I you know, I think that's so real that Star Wars for probably almost all of you listening has been a constant through our lives. And at least for me, and I think it sounds like the same for you, Greg, it's been a way through which we can even interpret our own narratives. We see our narrative in light of the Star Wars narrative. And, you know, I often feel like Luke in Yoda's hut, just looking for excitement and adventure, not wanting to do the real work of becoming the actual hero. And I think, you know, there's such a reality to Luke's mythological story that hits home for us. And because it's such a constant story that's constantly being told and constantly reinterpreted, we're always going to be able to apply it. You know, it's so cool that I eventually am going to get making Greg come on and giving us like a good breakdown of the hero's journey, specifically with the story of Rey, and then even more because Greg really knows this stuff as a professor. But, you know, even myself with you know, Star Wars and the religious aspect, the spiritual aspect, it's huge to me. It's a great way to understand all that stuff for me, and a great way to interpret it and continue to interpret it through the lens of Star Wars. I think it offers us that a thousandfold. So, Greg, is there anything else you wanted to add before we close this down? Or he said, I think I covered it, but he's far away from the mic, so I wanted you to know. You know, again, Greg, thanks for taking the time to do this. This was fun to do in person. Again, those of you listening, if you want to tell your tale and be part of this new segment, The Tales of the Larians, be sure to email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. Again, all you need is a Skype account and some sort of microphone, and almost all computers have built-in microphones these days. So let us know if you'd like to be on. We've already started a short queue. We'd love to get more folks on, I said the same thing to Joe, and I'm going to say the same thing about doing it with Greg, and I'm sure it's going to be the same with everybody, is my story feels more enriched by listening to others. You know, I think that's so real. I saw the same in my own personal life. I saw the same spiritual director for 5 years, And he would always say to me, he's like, I love getting to do this because I get to see how God's active in someone else's life. I think this is part of the reason I want to do this. I want to hear how Star Wars has been active in other people's lives and what it's brought to them, because it just enriches it for us. And I think that's why I love listening to stories like this, even if they're people I don't know at all. It's just so great because you see parts of your own story in it, and it reminds you of just how good Star Wars has been to all of us. So, again, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this second episode of Tales of the Larians. Again, we encourage any of you that want to definitely shoot us an email if you'd like to be on. For Greg, I'm Carl, and we'll see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.